Resources for Wednesday, April 18th, 2007. Open a work session on House Bill 5033, the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have at your place the LFO memorandum and work session documents for Department of Land Conservation and Development's budget. I'm going to refer you now to page 3 of the work session document. That's the spreadsheets. And start with policy packages in the planning program. Package 070 is a recognition of a revenue shortfall that reduces anticipated funding from Oregon State University System for planning projects that is no longer available, so that's a reduction, and there's no change to that package. Package 101 for Measure 37 adds 16 limited duration FTE for processing Measure 37 claims. And included in this amount is $2.1 million for attorney general costs. LFO recommends the approval of the package with approximately one-third of the package amounting to about $1.5 million placed in a special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund. The package is approved with the understanding that funding may be adjusted later in the session depending on the outcome of legislation currently under consideration around the Measure 37 issue. Package 102 is the flood hazard map modernization. It's $386,318 federal funds. LFO recommends approval of the package. Package 103, the 30-year land use review. LFO is recommending the package be reduced by $416,787 to reflect co-chair budget to fund at the 0507 budget level. It also reduces one position. The total package is $750,000. It's slightly more than the 0507 budget level. Package 801 is an LFO analyst adjustment. This is a technical adjustment to recognize position reclassifications that resulted from a statewide review of a classification series relating to program technicians. It adds $3,156 general fund and $12,623 federal funds to the budget. And Package 802 reduces landowner notification program by $90,000 for the Ways and Means co-chair 2% reprioritization. Okay. And I'll just move on to the grant program. Page 6, Package 301, General Fund Grants. LFO recommends adding $500,000 to be used for planning issues related to service delivery in unincorporated urbanizing areas. And landowner notification, LFO is recommending approval of the merger of the landowner notification program with the planning program that we'd already reviewed. With those packages, I take you back to the memorandum on page 3, on item 3, recommending the bill amendments to carry out the recommendations by LFO. We need to make adjustments in House Bill 5033 by adopting amendments to the line items and adding a new section which puts the $1.5 million in a special purpose appropriation in the emergency board.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move approval to amend House Bill 5033 by adopting the amendments that were outlined by the LFO analyst.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the motion?
We're not on budget notes yet, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, this is just the motion on the changing
the amendments.
Any objections to this motion? Seeing none, motion. Yes, Senator Nelson objects. Okay, now performance measures.
Yes. Mr. Chair, performance measures. LFO is recommending approval of the agency's request to continue key performance measures 1, 3 through 6, 8, and 10 through 17, and to modify KPM 2 and 9 and change the data for KPM number 7, 18, and 19. LFO also recommends approval of the targets proposed by the agency and also recommends the addition of best practices measure recommended by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for all boards and commissions.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the performance measures?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the performance measures as outlined by the National Analyst, okay. Including the, I guess we have a few word changes.
Okay, we've moved the LFO recommendation for performance measures. Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion on performance measures? Hearing none, motion passes. I will go to
Chair.
Yes.
Forgive me for interrupting, but if it's possible, I'd like to go back and object to the prior motion.
Okay. Let me think. I'll do it the standard way. With no objections, I will return to the previous motion to allow, to the first motion that we had to allow Representative Burley to change his vote. It will not change the outcome. How do you wish to be reflected?
Then I object.
Okay. And Representative Garrard also.
The same.
Thank you.
You've got to move faster, Mr. Chair.
Before they have their coffee,
okay.
I think
I'm only on the first go.
Yeah. Motion still passes. We had no objection to the performance measures. That motion passes. We're on to budget notes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, post recommending supporting a motion to support a motion to approve the following budget note. That states unincorporated or urbanized area public services and facilities are provided by several different governmental and special service district units. Failure among these agencies to develop long-range unified public facility plans have resulted in a fragmented and costly approach to service system delivery and construction. Consequences of this lack of coordinated planning and programming are apparent in the urban and urbanizable areas. In addition, $500,000 general fund is provided in this budget to provide grants to local governments to develop coordinated plans for efficient and sustainable service delivery in unincorporated and urbanized areas. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is directed to provide the emergency board by December 2008 a report on the grants awarded during the biennium with documentation of the amounts of the grants expended.
Is there a motion on the budget note?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the budget note as outlined by the LFO analyst.
Okay. Discussion.
Discussion. Mr. Chair, I think it would benefit the committee if we could hear exactly how the department would implement this budget note.
Okay. Ms. Shetterly, come forward. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Thank you for this opportunity just to reflect on the budget note. We understand that the scope of the budget note is directed at providing planning services primarily for infrastructure, water, sewer, those kinds of things, to facilitate the development of areas brought into urban growth boundaries. That, I think, is where the shortfall is happening. You have this expansion of urban growth boundary and then a planning shortfall to do the kind of work necessary in order to actually develop those areas brought in. That is what we understand the focus of this budget note to be. Those are the kinds of activities that we would expect to be funding under this budget note. Just so it's clear, those planning activities may be by cities, they may be by counties. There's a coordination in those areas where you've got newly urbanized areas brought into an urban growth boundary, but that would be the activity that we would that we understand this budget note would be directing us to facilitate. I guess I would also say, Mr. Chair, that to the extent that the $500,000 is not fully subscribed by grant applications, and it may very well be because there's a high demand for this out there, it would be my hope that that money may be granted generally through the General Fund of Grants program so that it doesn't just go away, but we would make those planning grants for development and infrastructure to newly urbanized urban growth areas the highest priority. I would just hate to see those funds go away if we don't get a full subscription for those funds, if that would be satisfactory.
Mr. Shetterly, my memory is accurate, and I seem to remember the number 128. Didn't we pass legislation a long time ago requiring various urban service providers to develop coordinated plans?
Mr. Chair, that then that's on the books. This, I think this will help provide funding to facilitate those kind of, that kind of coordinated planning.
I think it's been a decade, actually. Yes, Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I'll be opposing this primarily because we have made our land use laws, again, so complicated that we have to use taxpayer money to give back to those areas so that they can have LCDC get them through the process. What a complete waste of taxpayer money in that respect.
Any additional discussion on the motion on the budget note? Any objections to the budget note? You didn't say you object, Representative.
I do object.
And okay, Representative Garrard, Representative Burley, and Senator Nelson object. Motion passes. Mr. Shetterly, before we go on to the final motion, I just want to state for the record that I have worked with the co-chairs, and while I was not as successful as I hoped to be, you're still funded at about 25% higher than the level last biennium for the big look, and I appreciate working with the co-chairs on that issue, even though I was not as successful as I'd hoped to be.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your efforts and the co-chairs as well. We appreciate that there are lots of budgets moving through the process, and do appreciate your support that's reflected in the budget action you're taking this morning.
While we're on that, Mr. Chair, I would like to thank both your efforts and the department for being responsive and really as creative as possible, and understanding that the emphasis on the big look is on both getting information to the public and hearing perspective and input from the public as we finalize the big look. That's the push for this biennium, and I think it's something that the department will assist the commission in, I guess it's a committee, not a commission, the big look
Chair,
committee, in doing very well.
It's a task force.
Task force. Thank you, sir.
Any additional discussion? Do we have a final motion?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5033 to the full committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay. It's been moved to move the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion? Any objections? Please note for the rec discussion, yes. Representative Clinton.
I just want to say that... Well, I'm pleased with the way we've talked about the Measure 37 package in terms of if additional legislation comes forward, that we may have an option to resolve that. I certainly don't have a problem processing claims. I just wish that sometime since that measure passed in the last 4 years, either the authors or the legislature had been able to do this in a way that didn't cost millions of dollars of taxpayer money right here at the last second. It's one of the reasons I ran for office.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I'm going to be a no vote because we have a system of budgets here, and we're out of balance. We've benefited one, K through 12, to the detriment of everything else. And in my part of the country, we're losing kids out there because we don't have jobs. Schools are becoming less of an issue from our viewpoint. But we're hurting community corrections, AHEC programs, health care, economic development, higher education, community colleges by overweighting with K through 12. And if we have this system of budgets, you know, we got at some point we're going to have to say, how are we going to solve this problem? So I know, well, maybe not entirely to the LCDC, although I do have some issues as far as the budget is concerned. But at some point we're going to have to stop and say, we're out of balance here. And how are we going to get out of this whole thing? Because the message I'm getting from my folks back in the district is, what do you guys do down there?
Yeah.
This is an absolutely nuts budget that the co-chairs have proposed, and I'm trying to find some way to help and to vote for it, but I just can't get there because my constituents are saying this is not good policy. So I'll be a no vote for those reasons, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I know that Senator Nelson was speaking for himself in explaining his objection, but I just want to make it completely clear for the record that that isn't a position of the committee nor of other members of the committee, that other budgets are suffering because of some type of a bloat in the K-12 budget. matter of fact, speaking only for myself, other committee members can make whatever comments they want. There's plenty of detriment in any of the budgets to go around because of a failing revenue system in this state. And I would put K through 12 at the absolute top of the list of the budgets that is detrimental to the health and the raising and the teaching of our children. And so certainly, just to make completely clear on the record that that was a position, I think, of Senator Nelson's and not of the committee or any of the other members.
Okay, and
if you'd like to have a fuller discussion about the K through 12 budget, Mr. Shetterly may want to chime in. I don't know.
Representative Gerard and then Representative Burley. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just echo Senator Nelson's words in regards to the budget. Also, I'll be voting no on this bill because of the cut to the Big Look Committee. This committee may wind up being the last hope for any kind of constructive land use change in this state.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll ditto what Representative Gerard said. My objection here, the previous conversation notwithstanding, is over the cut in the Big Look Committee. I did, after we had the meetings on this budget, I did talk to one of the members on the Big Look Committee from Bend about this, and she was very much in favor for fully funding that and saw the value in doing that. So, if it's at all possible, I'd like to see that get the funding that it needs.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I appreciate the input that the committee members have provided here, but let's at least understand that the co-chair's budget is balanced. Whether you like the choices in the co-chair's recommendation is a different matter. But we've presented a balanced budget. And the full committee's ability to put more money into the Big Look or Measure 37 appeals processing or any other service depends on the willingness of the entire committee and the entire legislature to either take money out of some other service or raise revenues. So if that's where we want to go, that's a conversation that we ought to have. But right now, you are operating with a balanced recommended budget.
Yes, Representative Clayman.
We have a lot of people to testify for.
I just want to make it clear. My comments were directed that if the authors or past legislatures had helped, we would have less money going to Measure 37 appeals processors, not more.
At this particular point, we have a motion on the table. The only thing I would like to say is if you look at our budgets broadly, you will see that out of the three big budgets, education, public safety, and human services, the one that has the lowest percentage increase is education out of those three. So with that on the table, we have a motion to approve this budget. Objections, Representative Burley, Representative Gerard, Senator Nelson, any others? Hearing none, motion passes. See you in 2 years.
Even sooner.
Why don't you carry them to the House? I'll carry to the full and to the to the Senate floor. There's quite a few people here. We'll close the work session on House Bill 5033, the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Open a public hearing on House Bill 5002, the Department of Agriculture, and House Bill 5003, the Department of Agriculture Fee Ratification Bill. We have quite a few people signed up. What we will do is we will go to those people that traveled more than 100 miles first. I will actually try to limit everyone to 3 minutes because with about an hour left, I think that's the only way we're going to get through everybody. So we will start off with, only have three, with Kim Pusey from the Port of Umatilla.
proposing it. It's probably not Kim. It's just the way it
is. No, it is Kim.
Oh, it is Kim. And Doyle Hinman. Yes, please come forward also.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to note, at your place you have some responses from the department concerning native plant species in Oregon to some questions from yesterday. I'd also note that you have a packet of correspondence from a number of folks relating to the Department of Agriculture budget that are stapled together with the first page from the Malheur County Weed Control Board, Lake County Cooperative Weed Management Area. You have an email from a Todd Davis, another for funding for the Eastern Oregon entomologist position, an email from Union County, another memo from the Oregon Invasive Species Council, and a couple more from the Malheur Weed Control Board.
Let's go ahead and identify yourself for the record and begin. Mr. Pusey,
I'm General Manager of the Port of Umatilla.
You may want to move the microphone a little bit closer.
You have a copy of my written testimony as well as my contact information there in the file. A number of years ago, I had the opportunity of going to observe the British Parliament. Went to both the House of Commons and the House of Lords, and in there they have a unique feature that's about three times the size of this table called a wool sack. And it's originated in the 14th century. It is a cushion upon which the Lord Speaker, the Speaker of the whether the Mr. or the Madam of the Chairman of the House of Lords, can sit on this cushion to address the members. And the purpose of this, it's filled with wheat. It's filled with wool, and it is to symbolize the prosperity of the empire because of that particular commodity. I have, if I could stand up here, have a picture that hangs in my office. It's the only thing that that is framed and hangs in my office. It is Oregon-grown fresh produce. Been there since 1973. You can see that it has various commodities that are grown in this state and the months of the year that it's available. I keep it in my office to remind me that the prosperity of this state is based on these products. That is a portmanteau, and I have a role in trying to get those commodities out to the rest of the world. In the last 2 months, the Port of Umatilla has shipped Oregon products to Algeria, Australia, various locations in China, France, Germany, Hong Kong, various locations in India, South Korea, Malaysia, Peru, the Philippines, Russia, Singapore, Spain, Taiwan, and Thailand. A few months ago, the Port of Umatilla, after some meetings with officials in China, were able to sign an agreement with the Port of Yichang, which is our sister port on the Yangtze River. And the Port of Yichang is the gateway to the Hubei province in China that has 61 million people, about twice the market of California. So we're very excited about having that. Recently, I attended a trade show in Tokyo with members of the Department of Agriculture, and we met there with people who are interested in purchasing Oregon-grown products. The technical expertise and the cultural sophistication of the staff of the Oregon Department of Agriculture was not only helpful to me as a general manager, but certainly helpful to the producers that we have in this state who are trying to get their products out. And so I enthusiastically support anything that the Department of Agriculture is trying to do, and whatever they're here for, asking you for, I hope you give it to them. They're great partners. I can't see anything controversial about those products. Not all of the products are on there. It ranges everything from blueberries to blue cheese, and I mean, it's wonderful stuff. And I'd be thrilled to answer any questions and, you know, go on a little bit longer because I drove a long ways to get here, but I'll stick to the 3 minutes and I'm finished. Thank you.
Mr. Hinman.
Yes, thank you. My name is Doyle Hinman, and I'm the Director of Sales for Henry Estate Winery in the Umpqua region. I've been with them for 14 years, and I've been in the Oregon wine industry for about close to 30 now. I'm sort of ashamed to admit. Well, I'm not ashamed, but it's a long-term tenure, if you will. I am currently a member of the Oregon Wine Board's Export Committee, and my specific responsibility is for China and some of the other Asian countries that we're trying to develop for Oregon wine sales. The Oregon wine industry and the Oregon Department of Agriculture have worked together at varying levels over my tenure in the Oregon wine industry. They have complemented each other very well in all phases. Many years back, I was a member of the Oregon Wine Advisory Board, and I kind of looked at Oregon Department of Ag as our parent. They helped us with our fiscal responsibilities. They helped us hire people. And I think it was interesting to see in the longevity with them the changes. Now we seem to be, in my opinion, a colleague, a marketing colleague. And just like Kim suggested, we shared a very, I think, interesting event in Japan at FoodX. And that was actually the first time that I'd worked with the Oregon Department of Ag in a major international trade show. I was very impressed with Dalton and Patrick and their organizational ability for this event. And I think one of the things that's so important for the synergy, I think, that's developed with other agricultural commodities, if you will, I think the Oregon wine kind of adds some sex appeal to events that we do, and I think that showed very well at an event like what we did in Tokyo. Another event that I think really brought to my mind, I was the chairperson for the Oregon Wine Marketing Coalition, and it was directed at doing events domestically. And we had done events all through the country with all of our wineries and making our presentation. But we had this profundity to inject, if you will, some other commodities, agricultural commodities with it. And it was unbelievable to see how having other like pears and cherries and hazelnuts injected into our offerings to people, what it just supercharged our presentation. So I guess I look at all of those things as being very instrumental by the Oregon Department of Ag, and as Kim suggests, I highly support anything that the Oregon Department of Ag does to further these kinds of activities. And I also welcome any questions if you have any.
Members of the committee, we have actually 17 people left to testify. So if you have any questions that you really need to ask, please ask them. If not, I'd like to go on to the next people. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Could I acknowledge a couple of young people that traveled with me?
Oh, yes.
Back, Mitch Drinkwater and Sierra Schultz are leaders at Hermiston High School, and they came because they want to take your place in the next generation.
We need help.
Not this session.
I was going to say, they're welcome to come up. We can use the help now.
Rick Jacobson, and then we'll go back to the top of the list, Al Elkins.
Good morning. This confirms the reason I moved to Bend. I get to run in the row, so thank you. My name is Rick Jacobson. I am, as some of you know, the retired president and CEO of NORPAC Foods. I'm here today on behalf of NORPAC, its board, its management team, and the 240 family farmers that own the company, to testify in support of the ODA budget, which includes a certification component and also the Oregon Sustainable Agricultural Resource Center. Many of you heard me talk about this, so I understand if you could have to leave the room. Our company has been instrumental in developing this idea of OSARC, and I think it's a unique collaboration that needs to be talked about. It's about government agencies coming together with non-governmental agencies, including organizations like Defenders of Wildlife, the Celilo Group, and the private sector, which includes our company, Tillamook County Creamery Association, Pendleton Grain Growers, and a variety of other private businesses. I can tell you, it's really important to think about this, that the agency people, all of these unique and sometimes adversarial groups in the same room have been working very hard and enthusiastically over the last couple or 3 years to develop what brings together the state's collective expertise and resources through what I'll call a clearinghouse that presently does not exist in this state. OSARC and the ODA certification budget offers you all a unique opportunity to strengthen the ag economy, as well as very positively impact the environment. I don't have to tell you about the farm gate value of agriculture in the state of Oregon. You all know that better than I. I don't need to tell you things you already know about the multiplier effect of agriculture on the state's economy. But I think there's a few things I'd like to say if I just try to move my 3 minutes. I just want you to know I'm not here telling you anything you don't know, but I think it's important. Not only is agriculture important to the state's economy, it's a pathway to addressing those issues that are important to our citizens. If we want strong rural communities, agriculture's got to prosper. If we want to improve fish and wildlife habitat, agriculture and its practices are critical to that end. If we want watershed and restored wetlands, improved watersheds and restored wetlands, agriculture must play a key role. If we want productive soils, again, agriculture is the key. If we want safe, high-quality foods produced in a sustainable way, agriculture carries those answers. If we're to maintain food security for the state and the nation, support of our farmers and ranchers is critical if they are to compete in a global economy in a dramatically changing market. If we want these things, then bringing together all of the available expertise and resources that exist today in this state, supported by public policy, are going to be critical to maintaining those values and those principles for this state. If we're going to ask farmers and ranchers to continue to improve their practices and certify their farms under sustainable certification, then it's only logical that we provide them the support that they need to adjust to these changing dynamics. I believe that there's really a unique opportunity for you folks to form a real working relationship between agencies and people that have historically been adversarial with the private sector that's going to benefit both the state economy and its environment. I ask you to support the ODA's budget as presented in the governor's budget and to support the certification component of ODA that you'll be hearing about later today. That includes the Oregon Sustainable Agriculture Resource Center. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We, too, are in support of the Oregon Department of Agriculture's budget. We'd like to thank Katie Koba and her staff for helping with our concerns in developing such controversial subjects as the Wolf Plan, the Cougar Plan, and helping with technical questions regarding cervid ranching. And we would also like to support the predator control program as well as that's in their budget as well. That concludes my comments. I'm glad to answer any questions if there were any.
Good question.
Yes.
The OSARC is not funded on the co-chair's budget, but it's funded on the governor's budget.
That's correct. That's correct.
Conflict. There's Rick Jacobson is also from Pendleton. So I listen to these guys from Pendleton.
Okay. And I've been in the valley for 30 years and I now reside in Bend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. McDonald, John McDonald, and Michelle, I can't, Marksley. Please proceed.
Chair Giblin and members of the committee, my name is John McDonald. I'm president of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. And I apologize for sounding a little funny. I'm not doing too well this morning, and the voice is going along with everything else below. But I guess that's partly because I'm also from Pendleton, and funny things happen in Pendleton.
This is Pendleton connection. I can see about five faces out there. So I got to be real careful.
I've spoken with all of you in your offices and also in committees before and so forth, so it's no surprise it's exactly what the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts wants. We still would like to have the $6 million through the ODA budget to go to soil water conservation districts. In the second paragraph of the testimony that's being passed out, I think it's very important to note exactly what happens to those dollars that get to us. They are restricted to actions negotiated with the department to develop and implement the 39 Agricultural Water Quality Area Plan. In other words, we do not have the option to turn in a grant proposal asking for whatever we think we can get away with and whatever we want to do. The department and the Soil and Water Conservation Commission decide how much money goes to each district, and then we negotiate with the department to decide which work plans and which programs and activities we're going to do that further the goals of the SB 1010 program, the Agricultural Water Quality Program. I think that's important for two reasons. One is we feel that, in a sense, we are the delivery system for a lot of the things that go through the Department of Agriculture, particularly our way of complying with the Clean Water Act and other things under the TMDL system and so forth. Secondly, we feel that that has given us an enormous workload of which we're only touching a portion in spite of how fast and efficiently we may be working. Part of the request, of course, is also because of our partners with the watershed councils and so forth. We are naturally asking for a co-amount to be in their budget through OWEB as well, and important in the part of the leveraging. The second little thing I'd like to do is spend a couple of minutes asking you to address this little booklet that's in front of you. One prepared for each of you. The first thing is a letter from me sort of explaining what's in this book. The second page happens to be some of the activities that have taken place and been completed during the first year of this last biennium. I used just 1 year so you could take all the figures and multiply times two and figure out what you got for the biennium budget. The next two pages happen to be a list of all the kinds of practices that have been applied and the amount of some of those practices. And if you look at some of those figures and you know what goes into making some of those things happen, I think you'll be rather astonished at, you know, how many miles of this and feet of this and acres of this and so forth have been covered. Also with the fact that each one of those practices probably has anywhere from a 2 to a 10 page description about standards and specifications as to how they're supposed to be done, which is why we talk about the need for qualified, trained technical assistance and resource development people. The next page, the next two pages actually, is a little description that I've written up as to what do we mean by technical assistance? What is important? What does it do? And the last section, the next section after that, is with the pretty little page at the top, is a description of the money that has been leveraged through the conservation districts working with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. A lot of the practices that I talked about on the previous page were actually funded through USDA Farm Bill programs and some of them also through OWEB grants. But we leveraged $81 million in the year 2006 for projects that went on, you know, 480-some thousand plus acres. So we're talking about important work that's being done. We're not only leveraging the money that's coming through OWEB's budget and the capital money, we're leveraging what's coming through other federal and state monies as well. The last item is probably something that is more information than you've ever seen after the map, and that is a series of profiles. We've completed profiles on every single watershed in the state, and what you have in your booklet are the watersheds that happen to be in your legislative district, maybe even a small portion of it, maybe just a few acres. But this will tell you more than you ever wanted to know about what's going on, about, you know, what's there, about farming, about forestry, about acreages, about, you know, the impacts of climate and everything else, the kinds of resources that are being applied, the kinds of activities that are being done, the progress that's being made, and even where we got our data. This is the beginning of the detailed kinds of planning that we're doing that we'll be able to take not only into regional planning, but even all the way down to individual conservation plans. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee.
You may want to move the mic in that direction.
How's that? Okay. My name is Michelle Markiston-Ratcliffe, and I represent EcoTrust and a statewide coalition called Oregon Farmers Feeding Oregon Kids. And we're in support of the Oregon Department of Agriculture's budget and farm-to-school and school-garden programs.
and House Bills 3476, 3307, and 3185, which request an appropriation for farm-to-school and school-garden programs, enjoy support from all sectors of the agricultural community, including growers, processors, distributors, and food service providers. About 2 weeks ago, I put together a list. I already had over 50 organizations that sent their support for this, including Deck Family Farms, Food Services of America, Nutrition Council of Oregon, NORPAC, the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, Oregon Rural Action, Oregon Tilth, Cisco, Thrive, and Truitt Brothers. It's a very widespread across the thing. And then when I got to my desk yesterday, I had a whole another list of this, and I have about 50 emails in my inbox. So I just want to say that the support for these programs is huge, big, and not only are people excited about it in the community, both growers, ranchers, fishermen are ready to go, as are nutrition service providers in the school districts. I just brought a quick visual. I put this together. I was like, maybe you can help me hold it. What I did is the dots are farmers, growers, ranchers who have indicated they're immediately willing to sell to local and school districts. And then the lines are 30, the Oregon Department of Education conducted a survey, and 38 school districts said, yeah, right now I'm ready to go, and 75 more school districts said, please give us more information. We're really interested in this. And you could kind of see, I love math. So this is first blush, and so I just am saying, please support Department of Agriculture in doing this program. Thanks.
Yeah, a quick question.
Could I ask you, are you in support of the governor's budget or the co-chair's budget?
Well, my understanding is this is not in the budget because this is late on the scene, and that it's a note. Do you want to speak to that?
Representative Coimano, it's his advertisement, so Representative
but it's in two bills that unanimously passed out of the Education Committee, which are on their way, and you will be hearing me talk about this endlessly until these bills become law.
He's learning quickly, Mr. Chair.
Just to follow up, I mean, in excluding this particular issue, are you in favor of the governor's budget or the co-chair's budget?
Is this a personal question?
No, well, this is from the organization. I mean, that's
just organizationally, we have no comment on that.
We've got to figure out.
I'm like, does it include this?
Yeah,
we've got to
figure out.
I don't know if that's
what
you didn't give the option of
moving. Yeah, I didn't give the option either. I got to learn.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jimmy Kagan and John McCauley.
Jimmy decided, Gail Achterman, director of the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University, and Jimmy Kagan, who's manager of our information program. And Jimmy is the one who really knows everything, but he said he thought I should talk, so we'll be very fast. We're here in support of policy option package number 402, the Oregon Sustainable Agricultural Resource Center, which is included in the governor's budget and not included in the co-chair's budget. As Rick Jacobson indicated, the Sustainable Agricultural Resource Center is just an extraordinary initiative by 27 different organizations, and the Institute for Natural Resources has been staffing this effort over about the last year or so, pulling this coalition together. And of the 1.5 million in the policy option package, 200,000 will go to helping to set up this information clearinghouse, and the handout is they told us not to bring up a computer. We were discouraged from trying to do an internet hookup in this room, but if you go to the Oregon Explorer website, only the front page is up now to entice you into, if you invest in this policy option package, what you'll be able to get. And it's using the power of the internet and a natural resource digital library, a build out of the Oregon Explorer project, to really create one place where landowners, farmers, ranchers can go to access information that already exists in many different agencies and nonprofit, non-governmental organizations to help them develop sustainable farming practices. And if you look at this, there are three kind of features that I'd like to call out that will be included in this clearinghouse. One is that landowners will be able to get information on certification, soil and water conservation, pest and disease control, safe and fair labor practices, fish and wildlife, energy, animal welfare, all aspects of sustainability from these contributing entities. If you look at new developments, we'll be getting information from the Food Alliance, which has a self-analysis tool that people can use already available online, from the OSU Extension Service to get at all the extension publications and resources that are relevant, to get at the integrated pest management databases that are already available, to get at the terrific services of the certification specialists and marketing specialists at the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and they'll be able to connect with people in their local communities, like the Eugene Water and Electric Board, that's doing a very exciting sustainable ag initiative in the McKenzie or the NORPAC growers, or the work that the Oregon Department of Energy is doing with funding from the Governor's Fund for the Environment. So we really urge you to support OSARC, to support the full package of $1.5 million, and we think that you'll have a very exciting, powerful tool that will leverage the investments you've already made, both in state agencies and in grants for non-governmental organizations that are interested in sustainable agriculture for our future. Jimmy, if you've got any technical questions, Jimmy will answer them.
Well, we probably don't have too much time for any questions, but very quickly.
Very quickly. The only thing I'd like to add is that this thing that we're talking about building is a digital natural resource library. We're tied in with the Oregon State University Library, and it's unusual in that it's a way to both take advantage of all this existing information and also make sure it's taken care of over time, so that we're able to basically keep the information up to date and make it available to everybody.
Thank you.
Mr. McCauley and Mr. Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John McCauley. I'm here representing the Agriculture Cooperative Council of Oregon. I'd like to say at the outset that I do work with a lot of different agricultural organizations as clients of mine, and just want to extend compliments to the Department of Agriculture for the work that they do. I have opportunity to interface with them on all sorts of levels, and I think they do an excellent job balancing their regulatory responsibilities with their advocacy, and truly appreciate the job that they do. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Oregon Sustainable Agriculture Resource Center that you've heard about a couple of times. Our members were instrumental in moving this process forward. As you heard from Mr. Jacobson from NORPAC, as a leader in getting this going, we also had leadership from Pendleton Grain Growers, Oregon Cherry Growers, Wilco Farmers, Tillamook County Creamery Association. And all of those folks sit on my board of directors, and they decided that our organization was going to be actively involved in this process and asked me to serve in that capacity. I've been very impressed with the work that has been done to this point. I have noticed that this is an overwhelming process because of the volumes of information that is available and the work that is being done to bring that knowledge to a usable format for producers who really can benefit from it. And I think that's the key part of OSARC, is that it is designed to benefit producers. And the group never loses sight of that fact. And so I really encourage you to add this back. It is a part of the governor's budget, but not part of the co-chair's budget, and I encourage you to add it back to the benefit of farmers in this state.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Nelson, the real David Nelson. I represent
shameless.
That's an in-house joke. He stole my golf cart one time. didn't steal, he borrowed it. Represent the Oregon Seed Council, grass seed growers in the state of Oregon, farm about 535,000 acres of grass seed and export it all over the world. the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, which is represent both the third and fourth largest agricultural commodities in the state, and the Oregon Meadow Foam Growers Association, which is a little specialty oil that goes very high demand now for cosmetic products, hair care products, which some of us use. We work in those associations, and those producers work with virtually every division within the Department of Agriculture, from the Natural Resources Division to the Measurement Standards Division. I recall getting a call from the state of Arizona that a bag of grass seed was weighing 49.95 pounds instead of 50 pounds. And so they were wondering what we did up here, and we worked out the solution to that problem with the Department of Agriculture. We've also been involved in international trade programs. We've operated a market access program grant from the USDA for 12 years, working with Hungary, Chile, Mexico, and China. We've increased sales of grass seed to China from 50,000 pounds in 1994 to almost 20 million pounds in the last few years. So department's programs play an integral part in the development of these international trade programs, because other countries are very much accustomed to dealing government to government, and they play a key role in facilitating the development of that trade. I had hoped that one time, and I think Senator Avakian's committee has a bill on dealing with lottery bonds for cellulosic ethanol development. I hope that that's on the way down here. It was up last week in his committee. We would like to see the Department of Agriculture become very much involved with cellulosic ethanol development for cellulosic fiber, which the grass seed industry has a few excess pounds of that, as well as the wood fiber industry. So we would support their budget. We would hope that it could be tweaked a little bit as it goes along, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Mr. Faber, and I guess it's Chris Jamer. Jamer?
Jamer.
Looks like an eye. Well, in my case, you could blame it either on the quick writing or my eyesight, one or the other.
Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Bernie Faber. I reside in West Salem here. I'm a dairy farmer. My sons and I operate a dairy farm out here. I'm currently a member of the State Ag Board of Ag and chair of that board. I work, as well as the rest of the board does, quite extensively with the department. The issues that are out there seem to be greater every year, you know, from air quality to water quality to labor to, you know, the possibility of invasive species, all those kind of things that are important to have the right kind of staff and money to deal with those issues. One of the things that the board did here, and I think every one of you got a copy of that biannual report. We tried to make that as short as possible so it wouldn't mean an awful lot of reading for you, but all the things that happened in agriculture and all the positive things in agriculture, you know, it took us over 200 pages to do that. So the importance of agriculture in the state is of utmost importance. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Chris Jarmer, Oregon Forest Industries Council, and I'm here today mostly just to express our appreciation for the department's staff and the programs that they implement. They have specifically they have responsibilities that affect us in a couple of different ways, and you've already heard in the Department of Forestry's budget the sudden oak death issue that the Department of Ag and the Department of Forestry do a great job in helping us out as forest landowners. And the other area that they're very important to us is the issue of pesticides and invasive species as well. So just wanted to let you know that we really appreciate the good work that the Department of Ag does and the good cooperative nature that they share with the Department of Forestry, and just wanted to put that on the record for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Mr. Levinson and Ms. Fast. Lawrenson.
My eyesight is just really bad. I need to get it.
I'm looking at it. I'll never make it more radio.
No.
Thanks, Ted. For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. On the first day of the department's budget process, the committee saw a breakout of the different types of farms and the multitude of farm sectors, from large-scale operators down to small, under $10,000 worth of sales. And Oregon Farm Bureau represents that multitude of the makeup of the agriculture community. And the one common piece of those different sectors is probably a passion for agriculture and a desire to see the industry thrive. A healthy Department of Agriculture is key to that happening. And we appreciate the leadership that the department has with Director Koba, along with the dedication of her staff and the working relationship they've established with both the agricultural community and also the environmental community in working out conflicts. We are here today in general support of their budget. However, we have some concerns within the co-chair's budget that I'd like to line out and highlight some important sectors of add-ons. Our first priority with looking at the budget is that the department's left whole and current positions are maintained as we move into the next biennium. We are concerned with the removal of Package 306, the Eastern Oregon entomologist. This position serves a critical need for pest identification and assistance in eradication of pests in Eastern Oregon. We are in general support of the two of the fee increases, the livestock brand program and the pesticide fee and programs. These are mainly fee-supported programs, almost entirely from the industry. And the department worked with both the pesticide companies and the users, along with the brand payers for putting in the fee increase request, and the industry supports that quite broadly. There are two programs within ODA's budget that we feel there's not adequate funding in either the governor's budget or the co-chairs. The first is wildlife services. We would support a funding level of $720,000. That would be an increase of $288,000. That is a cost-share program with the federal government, counties, and private partners. Our counties are facing budget turmoil in the coming year. Also, the industry is facing high wildlife depredation issues with cougars, wolves, bears, and geese and other species. The second increase is a request of funding of $6 million for SWCDs. You've already heard details on that program. In terms of new positions to the agency, we are in support of the Renewable Energy Package 401. There is increasing demand for assistance with renewable energy for the broad spectrum from microhydro, biofuels, wind. There are quite a bit of policy discussions, financial grants that need assistance, and just general questions from the sector. And the Department of Agriculture has not had a full-time staff person to service the industry. I think they are finding gaps in their ability to answer some of the questions out there. And a big one when we're looking at biofuels is the discussion around cost of livestock feed and food prices as more increasing demand go on the feedstocks that are being used for biofuels. The department, I think, can help sort out and guide some of the policy decisions surrounding that, but they need dedicated staff. And additionally, this would continue research regarding canola production and conflicts with other seed crops in the Willamette Valley and looking at alternatives to canola for biofuels. Finally, Oregon Farm Bureau also supports component one of Package 402, the sustainable agriculture component. This is actually the certification positions, two positions dedicated to certification. The marketing sector is changing for agriculture, and It used to be certification was a way you could distinguish yourselves within the marketplace. Now it's becoming a place, certification's a need to get into the marketplace. And the department has a gap there when you look at their marketing program, and we feel like this is a position, these two positions would service the industry and also service the food distributors and marketing sector on helping them distinguish between the different certification programs and making sure we don't have duplication out there. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes. Richard, just actually a comment. Really support Katie's comment about the wildlife services. That's been an area that's been flatlined, I think, for a very long time, and that I'm hoping that the chair sometime in the future may give a consideration to an add back in that area.
Mr.
Chair, I have a question, but I'd like to hold it and wait to hear what Mr. Lawrence has to say first.
Okay. Mr. Lawrence.
Chair Dibbler, members of the committee, my name is Ted Lawrence, an assistant state forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. And just for the record, Chris Jarmer wrote both our names down, so it was not your eyesight that caused the problem. The term synergy has been used quite a bit today with regard to the Department of Ag and its work. And the Department of Forestry, to be successful, relies upon the Department of Ag in several key areas. And for that to be successful, they've got to be successful. These partnerships include invasive species, pesticide use, and the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, among others. While these partnerships are important, it is especially important that we address invasive species and pesticide use in Oregon. The governor's budget provides a lot more opportunity for success to be accomplished, but even that, with regard to invasive species, is probably inadequate. There's no doubt that historically invasive species have caused major economic impacts to our forest. It's easy for us to forget that white pine is no longer functionally a species within our nation's forests and Oregon's forests. We forget many things that are now considered native, like nutrient starlings, blackberry, and scotch broom, caused tremendous production losses. While this history is sad, it no longer reflects the huge wildfire of biological species that is out of control in Oregon. Forest landowners raised this issue to the Board of Forestry. We partner with ODA with regard to this effort, and we're working with them and the Forest Service, BLM, and local universities and landowners to develop a more constructive program around this. As you've heard, since 2001, the high-profile case has been sudden oak death. Again, the funding for that is problematic, at least from the federal side. This pathogen affects at least 107 different species, two-thirds which are grown within Oregon's forests, and also impact a number of nursery stock, Christmas trees, and other things. Species like tan oak that are greatly affected this provide a critical feed for wildlife. In an interesting coincidence, we issued a wildlife alert yesterday. The purpose of the alert was to reinforce efforts to identify garlic mustard, a pretty vile noxious weed. It's a newly recognized weed in Oregon. It's on Oregon's natural noxious weed list. It's been found in the Portland area, Multnomah County, Gales Creek, and Washington County. There's been a sighting near the Valley of the Rogue in Medford. What makes this weed unique is that it can survive underneath the shade canopy of a forest. Getting information out to foresters and forest landowners allows reports to be made to ODA and eradication efforts to be planned. ODA offers grants assistance to fund these efforts, and many landowners also take their own initiative and implement eradication efforts. Without the information systems that ODA has, this synergistic effort will fail. And at this point in time, I believe funding is basically at a level that will prevent the process from getting worse slower, but not really solve the problem. So I encourage high level support to ODA's program in these two critical areas, and I look forward to answering any questions.
Help, Pete. Hit it. Thank you.
Five-year like Oregon Farmers Food and Oregon.
We are in general support, especially on the department having a position in place to help facilitate discussions between farmers and schools, and also assist with other types of direct marketing programs. Those are not in the budget. There are other bills coming, and we'll have those discussions when those bills get here.
What did she say to you?
Just lobbying.
Yeah.
Over here.
Oh, yes. Ted. Yeah, Ted. Mr. Lawrenson. I think you left your bill folder up there.
It's a big one.
It's pretty nice.
Mr. Stone and Mr. Witt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm pleased to be testifying this morning in favor of the Oregon Department of Agriculture budget. The Oregon Department of Agriculture has been a valuable partner on state and national affairs. We've worked closely with ODA Director Katie Koba and her staff on a number of initiatives just this year. Invasive species listings, working on concepts to stem metal theft on nursery lands, and addressing the single most devastating problem facing the industry, pests and diseases, particularly Phytophthora ramorum, otherwise known as sudden oak death. All you have to do is look at what's happening with the Midwest tree market, with the emergence and spread of the emerald ash borer, and that pest has decimated the ash tree industry across the United States. The ODA has worked with OAN to establish the building blocks for a national pest and disease policy that is supported by our entire congressional delegation, the Western Nursery Association states, and is gaining traction within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The ODA has our trust and a level of partnership that's admired by nursery associations throughout the country. On the OAN priorities within the ODA budget. A vibrant economic engine such as the nursery industry must be able to protect itself from invasive species and pests. Sudden oak death required a whole set of regulations and protocols to prevent its spread in Oregon to other nurseries and around the world. This example, which is part of the ODA budget request, is one that's particularly insightful and illustrative of our partnership with the department. The ODA and the Nursery Association have been working collaboratively on sudden oak death since 2001, when the plant disease was first reported in California. As an industry, we've taken the lead through the nursery research funding to support grant work related to this issue. In addition, the ODA and OAN have worked to develop an education and outreach program to enhance self-inspection and identification of sudden oak death. In 2004, we approached ODA regarding the development and implementation of a certification program that would certify nurseries as sudden oak death free, which is essential for the movement of nursery stock. The OAN has taxed itself through the nursery license fee to set up an emergency fund that would assist in emerging pests and disease issues that is detrimental to the health of the industry, and this is housed within the ODA. Finally, we are currently working with the ODA and Oregon State University Extension on a program designed for permanent eradication of sudden oak death and enhance the grower-assisted inspection program. We applaud Governor Kulongoski and the Ways and Means co-chair, Senator Schrader, and Representative Nolan, I'd say that if she was here or not here, for fully funding ODA's sudden oak death program. ODA does an admirable job representing the many crops and agricultural interests around our state. The department leverages federal dollars with money that the state legislature provides and continues to be a good investment of resources. Very quickly, I'm not going to go into any of the OSARC stuff that you've already heard today, but two quick items that were cut out of the co-chair budget. First, the invasive species coordinator. The OAN is a leader in educating its own membership about invasive species, and we support the ODA to establish a coordinator in the Invasive Species Council. The Eastern Oregon entomologist. I practiced entomologist all last night, so I wouldn't get it wrong today. It's not unusual for an agency to shift position funding from federal to state. And this program option will utilize the Eastern Oregon entomologist, which is part of the governor's recommended budget, which deals with issues of advanced warnings of escalating grasshopper population levels, and provides much-needed technical assistance to landowners. The OAN appreciates your consideration and understand you have to weigh a lot of factors, and I just wanted to be able to say without reservation that we support this department and their budget request before you today. Happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Here today specifically to support the increased fees on pesticide registrations, which go to basically fund the base pesticide program in Oregon. I think from the from a general perspective, we'd like to commend the ODA for finding the balance between advocacy and enforcement. It's a very difficult juggling act at times, but we base our comments on two facts. Number one, if things are not going fairly, and that's I think the operative word is if they are not regulating fairly, we get tremendous comment and feedback complaints from our growers throughout the state. We have not received those types of complaints that they have been treated unfairly. So that's a very good barometer. On the other side, on the enforcement end, I think the history of the department speaks for itself. In the last 2 or 3 years, the department has administered enforcement penalties or civil penalties of record amounts, both under ORS 633, which is the fertilizer statutes, and also under 634, which are the pesticide statutes. So they do have the ability to, what we term, use the velvet-covered hammer when they have to. They implement and enforce the pesticide statutes fairly, and when needed, they can get very, very tough. And we're supportive of that. And as many of you are aware, we're also supporting a bill in the legislature this session to give them the ability to fine $10,000 per count for misuse of pesticides that's done on an intentional perspective. So we really applaud them. We have worked closely with them on this fee increase, raising the cap from $160 to $250. That puts us as a state roughly right in the middle of all other states in terms of registration fees, and it is the single most, the largest revenue stream that comes in to support the base pesticide program, which is absolutely essential that we keep fully funded. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? I'll represent Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is interesting. So if I'm reading this correctly, if I understand this, the manufacturer pays these fees of the product, not the applicator.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that's correct. It's the basically either the manufacturer of the pesticide or if it's a formulated product, the formulator. So it is the person who basically distributes, or I should say markets, the product. And that is on a formulation basis. It's not unusual to have a registrant have 90 different products that they're paying registration fees on. And that's why we think that it's the most equitable way, because it also entails, it covers all of the pesticides that are used by households, including disinfectants, rather than just heap the financial burden on what we would call the commercial pesticides.
Thank you. Thank you both. We have 4 left to testify and 12 minutes left before the House members have to leave. Mr. Taylor and Mr. Anderson.
I'll get started in the interest of time here, and I'll be very brief. My name is Bruce Taylor. I'm here for Defenders of Wildlife this morning. First thing, just in passing, I wanted to mention we appreciate the co-chair's recommendation to fund the confined animal feeding operation program with general fund dollars. Fine program, but as a defender of Measure 66, I would say that was not a good program to fund with Measure 66 funds. But the item that I did want to focus on this morning, and you have a statement from me in front of you there, is the Oregon Sustainable Agriculture Research Center and the governor's proposal. Just want to emphasize our support for that. Defenders of Wildlife has invested a lot of time and effort in it. You've heard from a lot of other people here today, and I think the diversity of smart people telling you what a great idea this is should suggest that it probably is a good idea. And we recognize the challenges you face in trying to find some extra money to plug some of these holes, but we certainly hope you will find some. Thank you.
the other half of the Bruce and Bruce show, Mr. Chair. Bruce Anderson with the Northwest Food Processors Association. Northwest Food Processors Association was organized in 1914. We're the third largest manufacturing sector here in the state with about 17,000 employees and about a payroll of $1 billion just here in Oregon, appearing here in support of the Oregon Department of Agriculture budget. A lot of the comments I think you're hearing today are really reflective of the fine leadership of Ms. Koba and the outstanding work of her staff. And I would just second a lot of the comments that you've heard today already, notably Mr. Jacobson's comments on OSARC, outstanding program we hope would be able to move forward. I want to just talk about a couple of little areas, if I could, please. Food processing is an industry that brings together our rural and urban states, unlike a lot of industries here. And I would say that ODA is very similar in that regard and in its effect on all Oregonians. They perform a vital role for our state, bringing economic development, enhancing economic development for our agriculture and food processing industries here and opening markets overseas as well as around the nation, but also providing some vital consumer protection and regulatory measures as well, whether those be the ODA labs up in Portland or notably in a couple of areas that impact our operations, food safety and weights and measurements. Those are two programs where we interact a lot with the ODA, and it's ensuring the safety of our food system, as well as protecting consumers as well in various aspects of that. We've seen fees increasing lately in the food safety program. You're going to be seeing some a huge fee increase coming through in weights and the measurements program, which industry is supporting. We've got some concerns, obviously, about paying higher fees, but we feel those existing programs are important. We also feel that all consumers benefit from those programs, not just those that are utilizing the services and getting the certification. And the one little pitch I would make here is more general fund support for the Department of Agriculture that has waned a lot we've seen in the last several years. And notably, food safety and weights and measurements are two aspects of ODA that could definitely use greater general fund support, especially given the tight margins that food processing faces. It's difficult to absorb these costs, and so we would ask for your support in that area, but generally supportive of ODA. Thank you.
Thank you both. We actually had one late addition, so I'm going to call three people up. Mr. Welsh first, then Ms. Evans, and then Ms. Hensley. And we can actually have you all come up.
Chair Devlin, committee members, Jim Welsh representing Oregon Cattlemen Association. Just wanted to highlight a few things here. A lot of things have been said that we certainly support, and one to begin with is the department, and it's certainly a joy working with them. Just exemplary leadership and a willingness throughout the whole department. Certainly our members working with the staff and everything and working out details that mean a lot to our people. We want to note that the entomologist, $171,147 per diem item that was removed. We would like to have that added back in. Wildlife Services at $720,000, and the letter I sent around details a lot of that. And you see the support group that was listed there, cattlemen, the sheep growers, Oregon Livestock Association, Farm Bureau, and Food Oregonians for Food and Shelter, supporting this. And that does increase that $288,000 increase. Very, very needful program as we see as livestock producers. We supported the fee bills, weights and measures, the increases there, working with the department, and right down to just a week ago, again, sitting with them and working out some details with the grocery industry, too. Brand inspection, and there's increases coming in a fee bill. We support that. And an extension to that is the stray program, where they go out and check where animals have gotten loose, check bad fence lines and things, an extra amount of duty. We'd like an increase of $30,000. They said that would be very helpful through that program. Not a lot of money when you start looking at these detailed budgets, but it is very important to them. And we would support overall, of course, an increase for the department, because we had, like Bruce Anderson included, there's been a waning in this natural resource overall, and certainly Department of Agriculture. And we supported, of course, the increase in the pesticide program fees. We support that. And with that, I close. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Welsh. Mr. Welsh, neither one of us have aged since we first met each other.
Thank you for reminding everybody else in this room.
Yeah, right. Ms. Evans and Ms. Hensley.
Thank you,
and we
Chair
have about
Devlin.
6 minutes.
I'll be fast. And members of the committee, my name is Nan Evans. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy. I want to add our voice for noting that what a great department you've got in front of you. They're a good partner for the industry, they're for agriculture and for conservation. We greatly appreciate the work and leadership of the director and her fine staff. A couple of quick points on the budget. We do highly support the co-chair's sort of restoring of the bright line about appropriate uses of Measure 66 money in voluntary, non-regulatory programs by removing Measure 66 money from CAFO, and that's already been pointed out today. We also add our voice to support OSARC and our voice to support the work of the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. What I want to spend the next minute on is on invasive species, however. This is an issue that industry and conservationists completely agree on. It's from a biological perspective, it is a biological catastrophe. Some people have used the phrase, it's a biological wildfire raging out of control. We as a state have underinvested dramatically in this important issue, and it's not only a biological issue, it's an economic issue. If you look at the numbers of the economic impact of invasive species, weeds, and others in the state, the numbers are staggering. There are about 100 or so listed noxious weeds. If you look at the impact of about 20 of those, the numbers come up to things like $83 million in lost income to members of the state, you know, thousands of jobs. The department and the Oregon Invasive Species Council has done a good job putting together plans to address this issue, but they've not been funded. There are two little tiny things you could do, and that's restore the funding for the entomologist and restore the funding, the general fund funding, for the invasive species coordinator. That's the first step of getting the public aware of the issue, aware of the pathways, and aware of what they can do. What you might not be aware of, and I don't think it's been brought up today, is that general fund for the invasive species coordinator, the $70,000, is essentially seed money. We in the conservation community have committed to work with the department to help find more money for that position, fully respective that there's not enough general fund around. But if you could just put a little bit of general fund in that position, we'll help find the other money to fully fund that position so that we can begin to work on that issue. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Hensley, you'll wrap us up. My House members have to be on the floor in about 93 seconds.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I'm Allison Hensley. I'm the Program Director for Healthy Food and Farms with the Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. First, I want to compliment the Board of Agriculture and Director Koba and her staff for reaching out to the environmental community to try and bridge some of the divide that's existed between the environmental community and the agricultural community to get to the budget items. As you are aware, there is a growing consumer demand for more information about how and where food is grown, and consumers are increasingly voting with their food dollars, expressing preferences for locally grown food and sustainably grown food. Right now, the department does not have the capacity to help Oregon's growers and food businesses take advantage of that growing market. I think there are two budget items that were requested by the department and considered by the governor. One is a local farms and nutrition position, and one is OSARC, that would give the department capacity to help Oregon's agricultural community take advantage of that economic development opportunity while protecting the environment. And so I encourage the committee to try and find a way to give the department the capacity to help the agricultural community meet that that opportunity.
Thank you very much. For the sake of those people here that spoke and those that specifically spoke on OSARC, the subcommittee chair needs help. And if you want to see that potentially funded, you're going to need to do a lot of work. I'll just leave it at that. And with that, I will close the hearing and adjourn.